morning.
I was president of the Showman's Club here in 75 and 76. And
but on Social Security, and they have to be show people to live in it. And it's a retirement village type thing, and they have a caretaker there, and they let people live there, and it's all furnished. So it's, I think there is a retirement place up in the Catskill Mountains for Broadway performers, theatrical type things like drama, you know, drama, rest home up there or something. That you, they have their own, more organized or whatever. But the outdoor circus people and stuff has not been organized that. That's why I'm very excited about this Preservation of the American Circus thing, because that could go on to something like that, like you're saying, to preserve the American circus, to make a retirement fund. But now with Social Security, everybody's supposed to have a retirement fund with Social Security. So, you know, that they make all the performers pay Social Security and everything, so that's about the only thing they have, and then they save for their retirement. Like me, I went into theatrical business, so I went into another business, and like a lot of people, they have to go into another business because maybe necessity or because of age or whatever, you know, or maybe because they want to. Maybe they're tired of traveling.
I think it would get pretty tiring after
you can take
a while.
This if you want. Take one of these. Yeah. The envelope is in. Maybe you'd be interested.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. It tells in there. Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh,
great.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But they're going to publish a newspaper eventually, like three times, like four times a year, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But take one of them, and if you, it's $10 a year is what it is right now. So I don't know how far along he is with it, but he's trying to get his main members and get a newsletter out. And
yeah,
and once they get enough money where they can hire somebody to promote it, then that's the main thing, to get somebody to work on it. You know, go out in the field, mm-hmm. promote, meet the corporate.
Do you ever do your birds anymore, the special thing?
Well, I haven't really. I like I said, I lost a couple birds last winter, and the dog is getting older. And that's why I said if I had a show together, then maybe I'd even be interested in coming up there. But I really don't have enough together. I have like three birds. Maybe I could do some little thing with them. I don't know. I've got like bicycle bird. I got yet. I could it'll work because Sally used them at Christmas time when we had a chance to work a show. So I had her work it down at Sun City Center for the retired people down there, Audubon Society. And so she worked that down there. It wasn't, you know, like they just wanted a little show and wanted something about the birds, and I could. I wouldn't have a complete show. I would never go back out to work professionally now at the way I am now, because I know my show wouldn't be what it used to be. It would take me too long to get together, because I had a flock of 35 pigeons that flew in for the finale.
Oh, my God.
And with streamers, gold streamers, I'm into a treasure chest. And my birds, you know, most of them has passed away and things have happened to them. You know, they haven't practiced for like a couple of years, too, and I'd have to start that over again. And then some of my exotic birds, I've lost a couple of my good ones, and the dog is getting old. So as my act like it used to be, I wouldn't go out to work anywhere professionally.
No.
Right. Because right away people would say, oh, look at that. Because I have done the same thing myself. I've seen people that's been out of the business, and like I've seen a person last year work, and I felt sorry for him. Because he was trying to work, and he was having so many problems. He'd been out off for a while, and he'd been sick, and I thought, golly. You know, it made me feel sorry to think he was even trying to work. He had to work or whatever, you know.
The kind of thing that our festival showcases, though, is what we're planning on doing, hopefully, is having a tent, a big tent, and having different people from all different walks of life as far as at traveling entertainments. Yeah. We have Bob and May Knoll. I see you got their book. They're
going to
come do medicine shows.
Right.
Not like they used to, because they
can't do it. Right. That's
but
right.
But to tell people, basically, people come up to the tent and talk one-on-one, like we're talking
about what it was like. Yeah.
And then they're going to do a few bits, you know.
Yeah.
They still can, he's got his dummy still, and they do a couple of, like, the 3 o'clock train bits that they used to do on the medicine show to show them a little bit about what it was like, but of course it's not going to be recreated what it was.
No, you can't. That's why I said even by these acts.
Right.
But I don't know.
And,
I I may be, you know, if as I said, I don't know what you're looking for, but I mean, I could maybe bring.
Well, see, I could see
two or three birds.
For instance, the whole business behind the scenes of how costuming is something that people don't think about as being.
Well, see, I could set up. I just need somebody else. See, the problem is Sally probably be on the road then, and it just leaves him here in the shop. Our business really slacks down then anyway. It's just nothing like in the summer, really. And I probably could get away, but I could set up a display of theatrical stuff, maybe. I don't know. But I'm thinking if I could find somebody that really sewed to make the wardrobe. There's a woman here in town, but she'd probably be gone on the road. See, if you had somebody sewing wardrobe, or had pieces of wardrobe. I don't know. Like I said, that's kind of in a distance, but in another way, it's in the planning stage for you, too. You got to realize what you're doing. But there's a possibility.
If you could kind of think about that. I mean, we don't need a firm commitment.
If you could think along those lines, that would be great.
And then if you did have, say, if you could bring a few of your birds and your dog with you.
Well, I wouldn't bring the dog because she's really,
She's
got arthritis and everything. Oh. Yeah.
And I feel sorry. No, I wouldn't.
But
I may bring her, but not to work.
And tell people, for instance, like how you started, how you train a bird.
Well, this is what I'm going to say.
Well, I could do a little. Are you going to kind of work this like at certain hours or something? I mean, I wouldn't want to do this continuously.
No. The Folklife areas are set up during the day. You take as many breaks as you want. Usually, you don't set up. It basically, under the tent, it'd be sitting with a display, say.
Well, see, I'm thinking I could bring like two or three birds, and I could do. I could show the basic trainings of them.
Yeah.
And then maybe have
Which
a display of my pictures.
See, the training of the birds is really the real traditional part of the whole thing is how people...
And I mean, I could, you know, I bring some circus pictures, some 8x10s, and make a little thing with the 8x10s and show what I had, way I did it.
And maybe a couple of tricks, final tricks.
That's right, like the bicycle or something like that.
And so we could feature like maybe a short.
Oh, I see. You said this Memorial Day is on Monday.
Yeah.
So 28, 29, 30, and 31. It'll wrap up.
And this is where this is up here at.
It's in White Springs. It's just north of. I was wondering if there's a map around there.
I got a Florida map in here. It's up on 301, near 301.
It's up 75, straight up 75.
Oh, straight 75. How many miles from here?
About 175, 180 miles.
I was afraid of that. See, what I'm thinking is to get away that time of the year. The problem is I got all the birds at home. It presents a problem for me to be gone overnight, so I'm thinking.
Oh, you mean in terms of who would feed your...
Yeah, I have all these birds at home. It just depends upon... Yeah. That's the only problem, one of the problems I have. And It's on Memorial Weekend. I wouldn't worry so much about down here, but it's the birds over there. I just have to more or less play it by ear. I'll consider it.
I will definitely be in touch. But,
I thought I had a part of mapping. I got everything else. You can have flights.
We're kind of just south of the Georgia border, actually.
You're up there way around. Florida map here at one time. Maybe it's in my car. I know about where you're at. You said you're up because I've seen it. The river.
We're based at a big park called the Stephen Foster Center.
Right. I know. And that's where it's going to be, right?
Yeah, it's going to be there.
Yeah, I've seen the signs there.
It's got a big outdoor amphitheater and then, of course.
Thank you.
indigenous to the United States and Canada. Mm-hmm. You do not find them in other parts of the world.
No.
And it is definitely a dying thing, you know. So we've been up there for a couple of years with that. And then they do a vaudeville show. Last year they had a whole thing on tap dancers,
okay.
Which now is, of course, having a revival.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did a thing on medicine shows and another thing on tent rep shows. So,
what will you be doing when you go up this year?
This year I think we're going to have the sideshow again. I think that's what he wants
to do. So you put on your whole full sideshow?
Yeah. 2 years ago, we did the sideshow up there, and it was, it was kind of a carnival-themed thing. They had an antique Ferris wheel there and some things mm-hmm. like that. And then this year, it's going to be themed to the circus, so we'll still have the sideshow, but we'll frame it circus mm-hmm. style rather than a carnival style.
Mm-hmm.
Last
What's the
year, we worked in the building.
A carnival and a circus sideshow?
A circus sideshow, you use a much larger tent because you give fewer shows in a day and you have to have a volume of people at one time. A carnival sideshow, you open early and close late and give 20-25 shows in a day. And so it's the thing at the fairs. We open 8 o'clock in the morning, close at 1 in the morning, you know. And... so you don't have as many people at a time. The entire equipment is really different. The carnival style front is an open front, usually much higher with lots of lights and a rigid construction frame. A circus style is without lights on the front itself. And the banners will come all the way to the ground on the circus, and you use poles that guy out with ropes, and so it's a different. Really, it's a whole different situation.
Well, that's really interesting. We've been up. They have a folklife festival that's later in the year that I've been up to sometimes, but I haven't mm-hmm. ever made it up for. What weekend is that?
This will be the last weekend of April. I think it's the 23rd, 24th, 25th of April. This year, in conjunction with this, excuse me, I'll loss up your tape.
It's all right. We can always,
The Circus Historical Society is having their convention at the same time in conjunction. And Richard Flint, who is the coordinator of the event for the Smithsonian and is one of their curators this year, is also the president of the Circus Historical Society, so it will tie in, and I'll also give a talk for the convention.
It's great. Well, how did you get started in the business?
To my earliest recollection, I wanted to be in the circus. Now, this sounds a little strange what I'm going to tell you, but they tell me this is a fact. When I was about 3 years old, I had taken two kitchen chairs and I had a blanket spread over them, and I was underneath playing in this, and my mother said, "What are you doing in there?" And I said, "I'm playing in my circus tent." And I, as far as they knew, had never heard the word. Certainly I had never seen a circus, and never saw one until I was about 8 years old. But knew what I wanted to do long before, you know, immediately. And had no talent, still don't. And my family was as remote from that as you can imagine. We from a very small town in western Nebraska. And when I was about 13, I guess, we moved to Denver. And about a week after we were there, a Cole Brothers Circus came into town and made a 4-day stand. I went out and worked on for the circus. But I figured that was a little too heavy, too hard, and so I backed away from that. And then the next year, Daly Brothers Circus was showing some towns nearby, and I went to visit and got acquainted with some of the folks in the sideshow. Now, my goal was to be a circus performer. But I, as I say, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't do anything, didn't know how to learn. I certainly had no, I was you know, not athletic in any respect. And so I figured I had that day met the people around the sideshow. And I thought, well, you know, they're nice people, and this would be a nice show to be on, and I'm going to see if I can get a job with the show for next year. And I'll learn to do something in the sideshow. And then once that I'm with the circus, then perhaps I can learn to do something to be a circus performer. I always have been an avid reader, and I spent a lot of time at the library in Denver, which had a good collection of circus books and so on. And so reading books and books on magic, and by trial and error, I became a fire reader and a magician. And so the next March, an ad came out in the Bill magazine, which my father had made me aware of, and I had been reading that for several years, for a magician and fire reader for Daily Brothers Circus. And I answered the ad, and I got a telegram back. I had asked for a salary of $30 a week, and they said the salary is fine. The show opens April 1st. Join anytime. And so I left Denver on March 27th to Gonzales, Texas. I arrived with $2 in my pocket at winter quarters. The show didn't open April 1st, opened April 13th. But that was, I was 15, and it was probably the happiest year of my life. I loved every minute of it. And at least as I look back now, I loved every minute of it. And it was a great experience. Then, of course, I stayed with that show for on and off for a couple of years. And that fall, teamed up with another fellow by the name of Harry Leonard, who we were partners for 19 years. And I learned to juggle, and we did a juggling and knife-throwing act. And when I was 19, for a very short time, I worked a lion act. When I was 20, I worked in a tight wire act. And when I was 21, I was the equestrian director, the performance director, and announcer on a little show. So I got to do the thing that I wanted to do. But along the way, I got my foot stuck on that stepping stone, the sideshow, because I found out that I also liked money, because I had never had had any money. We were a very poor family. And I could see there was a little money there. And when I was about, I must have been about 12, I think. And it was during World War II, and my father was a timekeeper at a construction of an air base in McCook, Nebraska. And so I went down and stayed with him during Easter week vacation from school, which was, we were only 26 miles away in the town I was born in. And there was what is now a defunct business, but at that time and prior to that was very thriving, what they call store shows. And a store show was a big sideshow that would come into town, rent an empty store building, and do a lot of advertising and grind away all day long. And Johnny Howard's store show was there, and it was 10 cents to go in. And my father gave me some money. I think I had $5, which was probably the most I ever had in my life at that time. And so I spent the most part of the week in Johnny Howard's store show. And he had a magician there, Don James, I think, but I'm not certain of the name now. And he sold the magic tricks in the envelope, I think at that time for a dime. And then I, of course, I bought one. And then I, hanging around there, I noticed that one of the performers was sitting there cutting out one thing, pasting it together, and somebody else was making something else up. So I said, well, you can make these things. So I disassembled them. And the winter before I joined the circus, once that I had made up my mind this is what I was going to do, I went around to all the hotels in Denver and asked for stationery. And then I'd go back to my room and sit there at night with my little scissors and paste and make up the magic tricks. So from the very day that I started in the circus business, I sold the little magic package. So I immediately got exposed to what I could see could, you know, make a little money. And I found out after a couple of years that even though I was only getting by then $35 a week salary in the sideshow, And I was doing about four acts, and each time I did something, I sold something. So I was making as much money as some of the feature performers in the Big Top were. And so I kind of stayed in the sideshow business for that reason, plus the fact that the people absolutely fascinated me and still do.
Sideshow people?
Yeah.
In what way?
Oh, the average the people, town folks, would probably think of many of these sideshow attractions as handicapped. Mm-hmm. And they don't think of themselves as handicapped at all. A lady who weighs 800 pounds, you might think that she is handicapped by it. But in her mind, she has an asset, not a handicap. And the same as Franklin Tini, who had three legs. That third leg wasn't a handicap to him. It was his road to fame and fortune, you know. And most of the people who are in the sideshow business feel this way. They are extremely well-adjusted people. There may have been a time back in the Victorian era when you would have had somebody like the Elephant Man who was sort of forced to exhibit themselves. But in this day and age, no one's forced to do anything. And most of these people can probably live better on the public dole than what they get out of the sideshow business. But just because they're handicapped doesn't mean they can't be frustrated actors. And that's the thing. They want to be in show business. And then the people who work for us, we do not have anyone. Well, I'll take that back. Our tattooed lady no longer dances. She used to be a dancer. But outside of Lorette, who's getting up in years, all of our people are performers. They don't just come up on the stage and say, look at me, I'm the fat man, or look at me, I'm the penguin boy. They all do something. They love it, you know. Dolly Regan, the half lady, half baby, who lives here in town, her home's over a few blocks, and she was with me for several years. And then her husband got ill and she retired. And then after Scotty died, she went back on the road. But in the meantime, I had replaced her with another act and she went with another company. And they didn't want her to do anything. All they wanted her to do was just to sit up there and be on exhibit. And she didn't like this, you know. And she's back with me now because she MCs the show, and she's very charming. She's humorous, and she loves it, and the people like it.
She called half lady, half baby because she's a midget?
No, she has a bone condition that has caused her body to not develop past the age of about six. But her head matured, so she has a face and a head like a lady near 60. But her body is still like that of a child, except that it's rather rigid.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's. Do you ever have trouble with? I don't know. We were talking to some people who have animal acts, and they have trouble with like the Humane Society. You know, putting pressure on people saying, "Oh, you're exploiting the animals."
Yes.
Do you ever have people saying that you're exploiting?
There has been this. In fact, in the state of Florida, and I believe it was 1921 or 23, I'm not sure, I'd have to look it up, a law was passed. It was illegal to exhibit anyone who was, quote, malformed, deformed, or disfigured. And anyone who presented such an exhibition, who publicized such an exhibition, or aided and abetted such an exhibition was punishable by 1 year in the state penitentiary and $1,000 fine. That was Section A of the law. Section B of that law states that any animal malformed, deformed, or disfigured, and the same thing, and it is punishable by 6 months in the county jail and $500 fine. All right. Most of us were never even aware of such a law existed, and it was brought to the fore by a reporter of the St. Petersburg newspaper, and they published an article about it, you know, and there were never any arrests, no problems, you know, but we just felt that this was very unjust, especially since the majority of the human oddities at that time, and I'm talking about in 1972, I think we instituted that, lived in Florida, owned property here, made their money elsewhere and spent it in Florida, and yet would not be legally allowed to work here. Although the law read in such a way that the exhibition, the attraction, was not the one who would have been arrested, but the operator or the person who would publicize it in the newspaper or so on and so forth. So anyway, we took exception to it and got a lawyer, and we sued the state of Florida, and it was a thing where we first, you know, thought we had to have somebody arrested, and nobody wanted to do that. So they, you know, nobody wanted to arrest anybody. That was the thing. And so we finally went to a little village down in the Miami area, and they agreed to let us apply for a license and then reject our license application on the grounds of the law. And, of course, it went on through to the state Supreme Court and is completely off the books now. And this took about 2-3 years, I guess, to get through all of the various courts, you know, because first we had to lose on the lower level and go to the appellate and then to the Supreme Court. So now there is an organization, the Outdoor Amusement Business Association, which is sort of a chamber of commerce of the carnival industry. And it was really because that I had started this lawsuit that I was put on the board of directors, and that had to, well, it was 11 years ago now. And so they recompensed the people who had put up the initial money to retain the attorneys and so on, and then carried the thing through to conclusion, which we're doing the same thing right now with the freak animal law.
Oh, that's still on the books.
It was still on the books because at the time that I did this, and I wanted to get a couple of the freak animal show operators to go with me so that we could clear it all up, and they didn't particularly want to be bothered. Nobody bothers us, you know, and so on and so forth. And so it took a while to get somebody who wanted to be involved.
Hmm.